record, and we are live.
No, we are recording.
Check, check.
Yeah. Check, check.
Unique New York. Unique New York. Maybe we should leave that in as an intro and people will know how weird we are.
Yeah, right. How much right. Would the woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood?
Would the woodchuck chuck Sammy Sosa bat and pine cork in that wood?
Nice.
Hey, hey, Cub fans, welcome back to another episode, episode 9 of Bricks Behind the Ivy. I am always, am Jeff Rogowskis, your host and known as Candy Cubs. With me is our co-host extraordinaire, Sean Hotstoves Chapin. Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about them Cubbies, those cardiac Cubs? They tend to just hold you on the edge of your seat. My gosh.
Yeah, last night was not fun. It was fun until until it wasn't fun for time stamping. This is going out tomorrow, and we are recording on Thursday, so we're referring to the Wednesday game that was really fun until it wasn't. So, yeah, I was ready to go to bed. It had been a long week, and yeah, I know, sacrilege turning off a Cub game early, but I felt like, oh, they've got it in hand, and it started falling apart. And I was like, well, if I go to bed and they lose, it's my fault. So,
yep. I was going to say it was going to be your fault. If you had admitted that on the episode right now and they lost, I have a feeling I'd have to, look elsewhere for a co-host.
No, I get it. I'm 100%. I mean, you should have seen the Northside Baseball Slack when the Cubs lost, and I was blaming myself for finally recording my voice and putting it on the internet and claiming the Cubs were going to have this great record and feeling that I was the one who altered the universe and we had entered a new reality in which the Cubs were no longer good. But that's what opening day could do to you when you lose and have a day off.
Yep.
I want to point out two things real quick before we get started on our first regular season episode ever, which is very exciting. Round of applause. But first, my background is different. As you pointed out when we signed on, I've shifted around the room and have gotten my awesome Fly the Wood design in the background, which I'm really excited about. And my Kerry Wood signed strikeout pennant and my signed Kyle Hendricks jersey, two of my all-time favorite Cubs. And if you're not watching the video, Sean, what are you wearing today?
I'm wearing the first official Bricks Behind the Ivy merch. Actually, I went over to the wonderful site, Obvious Shirts. Joe's awesome. He has
free ad,
because
we love you.
Free ad. I mean, come on. Joe's amazing. And I was like, man, what shirt should I get? And then I just stumbled upon Make Your Own Shirt, and I made this beautiful Bricks Behind the Ivy is a good podcast, because you know what? Might be a little biased. It is a good podcast.
Yeah, I personally think it's my favorite podcast that I have heard of.
Who wants to subscribe? Sponsors should reach out. I mean,
exactly.
We got over 600 downloads, just patting myself on the back.
Absolutely.
Patting yourself on the back. There you go.
Feels good. Yeah, I think it's funny. Last week I did the episode on vacation, and then you're like, let's order a shirt. I gotta show that commitment. So this is going to be, our first swing at a regular format of how we're going to look at week to week as the season goes on. So we're going to continue with the Friday release. We're going to continue with the Thursday record and try to preview the series coming up before we record next and do a quick recap. So our first segment today, I'm going to refer to as the Box Score Blitz. And in vain of some other podcasts that I'm a big fan of, we are going to go through the box scores in a very, very quick manner and talk about the things that we saw in the past week before we kind of slow it down and take some analysis. So without further ado, let's start the clock. There is no clock, but let's start the clock and let's go through. Let's go through the box scores really quick. Thursday, March 28th, opening day. Baseball is back. There has already been 8 Cubs podcasts from Bricks Behind the Ivy in the universe. So the world is good until it wasn't. Cubs lose in extras. They had taken the lead on a phantom pass ball that was a foul ball. No need to look into it too much. It was good for us until Adbert Alzolay came in the ninth and gave up a home run to a guy who doesn't hit home runs, Travis Jankowski.
Ball don't lie. Ball don't lie.
It felt like that karma came immediately. Unfortunately, the worst part of opening day was Justin Steele getting hurt. As you know, he's going to be potentially missing the rest of this month at least, and that seems to be the best case scenario. And the injury report actually wasn't as bad as they thought. It's a hamstring strain, and he's working through it. And they've already seen him doing some small tosses and stuff at Wrigley this week. Cubs lose 4-3. Start opening day with heartbreaker. Saturday, March 30th, we had to wait a whole day while I sat in my house, held my knees, and cried until the next Cubs game so I could wash that first game out of my mouth. And boy, was I disappointed. Throw this one out. Every team has a game like this every year. This was a stinker. Cubs were out, hit 16-5. Kyle Hendricks, who I got lit up on Twitter for defending, was roughed up in his debut. He wasn't necessarily as bad as the numbers show, but he wasn't good. Ben Brown did make his debut in this game, but it was not a fun debut. He pitched a little longer than I think people liked, and he gave up 6 earned runs. They lose a laugher, 11-2, no reason to remember it. 0-2 to start the year, my heart is broken. You can literally, just like Ralph Wiggum, see the moment where my heart breaks on camera. Sunday, March 31st, Jordan Wicks comes in, and he's a whiff machine. Looks really good for 4 innings. Only had 2 earned runs, but 5 runs given up because Juggles the Clown Morrell was playing third base, and we started to see what this transition is going to look like as he learns the position. Bullpen came in and was nails. Everybody's concerned about this bullpen in the offseason a little bit. 5 innings pitched, 7 strikeouts, only 3 hits after the 5th inning. Cubs had 12 hits and 9 runs. Really looked good. Morrell started the day with a home run, but he gave up some runs with an error, so he's +1 with the 2 runs he gave up unearned from his error and the 3-run homer in the first inning. So +1 on the day. Cubs win.
Great math. Great math.
Cubs, this is a math podcast. Cubs win 9-5. We sing the damn song for the first time. Monday, April 1st, the Cubs don't play. Just kidding, April Fools. It is opening day at Wrigley Field. After the world's saddest pyrotechnic display, the Cubs took the field at Wrigley for the first time, and Imanaga made his debut, being the first rookie left-hander to start the home opener at Wrigley ever, and he did not disappoint. That cold weather.
Those were the fireworks right there.
Correct.
Those were the fireworks.
Those were worth $5.3 billion per Forbes. Imanaga absolutely shoved, aka one of my favorite terms to use when talking about a pitcher dealing. Shoved. So fun. 6 innings pitched. He had a no-hitter going into the 6th. Had 9 strikeouts. Tons of whiff. The fastball was great. The breaking ball fooled a bunch of people. Yes, it was the Rockies. Let's stop that. But still, fun. Little League home run for Morrell. Cubs win 5-0. Ooh, excuse me. Tuesday, April 2nd. Cubs open up a big old can of offense. Belly, Cody Bomb. He hits a home run while Wrigley is chanting on a very cold night in April, the second home game of the year, highlighting why Wrigley is special. Morrell is showing so much growth at the plate, hit another home run, starting pitching with the ass man, Javier Assad. 6 innings pitched, 4 hits, 5 strikeouts. Cubs starting pitching to start the year at Wrigley, 12 innings, no runs. Cubs win another game. We're now 2-2. Life is good. Wednesday, Pat Hughes would say, fasten those seatbelts. Cubs were up big early on a cold night where it was snowing. And I thought it was over. What can Brown do for you? Brown can come in and shove. 4 innings pitched, 5 Ks, tons of whiffs on that breaking ball. But then got scurry for no reason at all. Cubs came in, bullpen did not look great after Brown. Things fell apart a little bit. We had another Morrell error. The Morrell error count on the season is already at 3. Not something I've been planning on the track. Not trying to point out the defense for him. It's a work in progress. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. My man, my boy, Mr. Bush. I like my Bush Michael, not light or heavy. Was 3-for-3 as he is starting to look a little bit better in the results end as the underlying metrics are great. Cubs win 9-8. And that is what the week was. 4-2 for our heroes in blue.
My gosh, that was great. You're a natural. I mean, I can't even talk that fast without stumbling over my words with normal talking. My gosh. He's a natural, folks. He's a natural.
Here's our snapshot of the moment. I think it's funny, after all the previews that we had about the NL Central, we talked about the slow starts and the things going to affect this division. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody heard that and everybody started hot. And Cubs 4-2, Pittsburgh 5-1, Milwaukee 4-1, St. Louis 3-4. You know, they started out west, so, you know, and they played the Padres and the Dodgers, a little bit of a tougher start the season, but they're not out of this division by starting 3-4. Just absolutely a surprise out there. We're still undefeated teams going into last night in this division. Everybody's hot. Obviously, early season standings, they don't mean a ton, but this division, as predicted, is going to be tight, and it has started with everybody playing pretty solid baseball.
Yeah, the Pirates, I mean, starting off 5-1. I mean, that is impressive. I knew that they were going to be good. I'm glad we both took the over on that, because I think we would look like fools, but because I think they're a really good team. Overall, looking at the Central, that I did not expect them to come out of the gate like this. And I think I saw it on Twitter. If the season ended today, there would be three playoff teams within the NL Central. That is incredible.
Just as we all predicted.
Yeah.
Small sample size alert.
Yeah. That'll be my next shirt.
It is funny to me just thinking, watching the Twitterverse, one of my favorite things and least favorite things at times, the Cubs Twitterverse. After those first two games, the sky was falling, the world was falling apart. I was probably part of that dissonance. But then you snap off four wins in a row. Yes, you know, one of them was like three of those are versus the Rockies, whatever the Rockies are. But baseball teams still have to beat baseball teams. I don't like the mantra of, well, they're not a good team. Well, if you lose to that team, we're going to hear the other side of that coin. Like, be who you need to beat. Last night was frustrating, but felt to me almost like a game that the Cubs wouldn't have won last year, and they still ended up winning.
Yep.
And that was a nice feeling. I do want to walk back on the just magical irony of the first game of the season just being full of every insecurity that we had projected in our projection episode of what's the third base defense going to look like? Is the bullpen going to be good enough? Like, what's the offense going to look? Where's the slugging? And like every one of those things in that first game. And then we had an off day on Friday. I was like, oh my God, I've never been so wrong about a baseball team in my whole life.
I know. And we can even, look at it from the optimistic point of view. Other things that we called out, if Morel could lay off those pitches out of the zone, especially those sliders, he's going to do well. And my gosh, his chase rate is like, what, 4%, 5% now?
It's unbelievable.
Like, unbelievable. And he's just hitting the crap out of the ball. I like to say when I'm right about something, Garrett Cooper. Yes. He was a single away from hitting in the cycle. I mean, that guy, you just look at a player, see him in camp. He just seems like a Chicago Cub and seems like he's going to be around for a while. He just adds a completely different dynamic than what the Cubs had last year. That's awesome. The other thing I really want to call out is Swanson is hitting the crap out of the ball.
Yes. He's got a 95 mile per hour as the last time. Average exit velocity, which is 7 miles per hour higher than his career average. The numbers are sort of there, but like they could get better. You know, actually up and down this lineup, I was looking at things on Baseball Savant today. The approach just feels better. And, you know, I know there hasn't been a ton of changes technically on the hitting coach side. And before I speak out of turn and really think about these things, like I am starting to wonder, and this is completely off base, but bringing in Craig Counsell and him kind of looking under the stones and trying to challenge the status quo for the Cubs. Yeah. And you look at this first week and the offense in, especially at Wrigley, in weather that just generally doesn't create offense. Like, this is one of those times a year where I just kind of check. I'm like, well, you know, like, I'm looking for approach, I'm looking for hard to hit, but they're not going to score a ton of runs because it's 30 degrees and the wind's blowing in and it's April at Wrigley, just not a fun place to play.
Yeah.
And then you look at the number of runs they put up this week and the hard hit rate and the approach of almost everyone up and down this lineup. It makes you wonder if the hitting infrastructure, if this is something Craig Counsell is like, hey, we need to do this. Because, you know, they used to turn, you know, turds into diamonds and Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And you look at, you know, yes, there was times that's not as talented of a roster. But now, like, this is a more talented roster than Craig Counsell has. Is this a Craig Counsell effect? This is something I'm definitely going to keep an eye on. It's obviously a small sample size alert, but it is very interesting. I mean, just how good out of the gate the approach of the lineup has looked. And it just feels very, very different. And it's a lot of the same personnel with, you know, some things on the edges. And, you know, Christopher Morel's at least approach at the plate kind of just really highlights why, you know, no matter how many times I called for this offseason, why he didn't get traded, why he's still on this roster.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it is small sample size, but I think a couple of things worth calling out with Counsell is his lineup construction. I think he's taking all the data points into, you know, consideration where a player likes to hit, where they're most productive at, you know, power. I mean, Morel's hit fourth. I don't have anything in front of me stating this otherwise, but I feel like he's hit fourth almost every single game.
Yeah.
And just being comfortable because he moved a lot under David Ross's watch. The other thing is the him starting Luke Little last night.
Yes.
Kamka,
the great Chris Kamka, said on Twitter, he's the first Cub pitcher to finish a game and then start the next game in
like
an extremely long time.
I didn't see that coming, and my gosh, man, he's impressive. You know, I went in kind of scared about the bullpen, and rightfully so. I mean, a bad weather night like last night, you could take with a grain of salt regarding stats and giving up hits and homers and stuff on both sides of the ball. But Little and Brown, Counsell's going to unlock something there if he hasn't already. I mean, Brown's got the stuff that of a late inning, you know, reliever, or, you know, he has the stuff of an ace. I mean, that breaking pitch is just devastating. And Little throwing 99 from the left side, and he's not Little. That's an oxymoron.
Yeah, 6'8". It's gigantic human. Holy cow.
I mean, that is – and Counsell's just – taking all these ingredients and stirring them up and making it into just this wonderful dish called the Chicago Cubs. I'm very encouraged so far. First couple of games, not so much, but I think there was some positives there. But overall, yeah, it's the Rockies. But my gosh, they just look really good.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at Ben Brown, one thing that I will continue to monitor, you know, I like the whiffs on the curveball. It is a uniquely shaped pitch, as I've read. Lance Berdowski has done a lot of analysis on this. And, you know, it's interesting, too, that he has, you know, higher than average vertical and horizontal movement on his fastball. So that is something that I feel is worth noting. The one thing that I'll put with a grain of salt, he was getting hit pretty hard in that game last night. Yes, with a higher ground ball rate, but still hit pretty hard. We saw how he got hit by that Texas lineup, which is a little better lineup. He really needs to establish that changeup that I know he's been working on if he's going to be a starter. I think at minimum, he's a nice weapon out of the pen as they look to cover innings while we wait for Tyone and Steele to come back, which Tyone is starting his rehab starts this week. But yeah, I am encouraged by what he looks at. I like the whiffs on the curveball, but I think there are some concerns of predictability and being able to have another pitch to pitch longer in the games, to have a little more longevity. But I do like how he was deployed last night.
Yeah.
Not having him as a traditional starter, have him come out of the pen. And yeah, it just feels like everything that we talked about in the offseason when they hired Counsell of, how he manages young pitching, how he puts guys in, how he kind of takes the foot off the gas in certain games and doesn't waste bullets. Like, Craig Counsell is as advertised early on, and I can't be happier with the management situation. And
I love it.
Something that I've really enjoyed too, that I understand in theory it would have been difficult, but the way that he's used the DH to spell certain guys, like he's had Ian Happ, obviously, you know, kind of was a little banged up in spring. He's off to a torrid start on base wise. One of the top on base plus slugging percentages in baseball currently. Early sample, small sample size alert. But using him as a DH from time to time to get Talkman in there in some lineups, like how he used Garrett Cooper, and then he used Cody Bellinger to get him a night off out of center field. Just resting guys without resting them and still putting out really, really good lineups. How, you know, he's in close games and certain matchups, he's already deploying Nick Madrigal at third base, which is still, even a year later, a weird sentence, thinking Nick Madrigal as a defensive replacement. But I've really just appreciated early on how he's managing the roster and using the DH.
Yeah, I think he's going to even... The great thing is he has a lot of great athletes on the Cubs. And I can even see situations, and this might be getting way out ahead of myself, where, you know, Swanson might end up DHing a game, putting Nico at shortstop, Morel at second base, where he's probably going to be the most comfortable. And you know, and then eventually Matt Shaw at third. Yeah, I snuck that in there. But I think overall, in the early going, what he's being paid is showing up in results in the early going. I am one to blame the manager quickly and not give that much praise, but early on, he's doing it right.
Yeah, early too. Just going back to the hard hit rate, Cubs have two in the top 15 of barrel rate to start the season. And I think one of them is very obvious. And the other one, I think we've talked about him, but it is weird seeing him on this list. Christopher Morel being the obvious, he's number six. And Dansby Swanson at 15. And there was some talk this spring about how it looked like he had kind of changed his approach to keep the bat in the zone a little bit longer. And I feel like that's probably going to help him with fastballs and really kind of eliminate some of his weakness on some of the breaking stuff. And early on, yeah, the dividends have looked good. You know, it is interesting, though, beyond Christopher Morel, there has been some sloppy defense to start the year, which has been unexpected. Obviously, these things can change very, very quickly, but there's that game that Swanson had an error. Nico has already got two errors. Christopher Morel obviously got some errors. Just not necessarily what you want to see. I think these things will tighten up, but... Yeah, just a little on that end. Early on, I was a little worried about that, but it has not reared its head. I think the Christopher Morel thing at third base is definitely something that has to continue to be monitored. And the types of errors he's been making over there, I have read other folks' opinion in watching him play. I'm not sure, as other people have said, I'm not sure if something more reps is going to fix. It just, for some reason,
I saw that too.
It just doesn't look like, you know, the instincts are necessarily there. The throwing problem is just confounding. It's that arm angle, and which is the reason he hasn't played there. And you don't want to lock him in at DH, but, you know, as people talked about in the offseason, he just has to be mildly serviceable and continue to swing the bat like this, and to be able to put him there. And like fly ball matchups, like you're probably putting, but then, you know, you start to get worried, like you put Morel at third when Imanaga, who's a fly ball pitcher, and then there's one ground ball in that inning that gets away from Morel, and then he gives up that damaged fly ball, you know, immediately after that. Like, that stuff can add up in a ball of a game pretty quick when margins are thin. So yeah, we'll continue to monitor what Christopher Morel looks like at third base, much like the rest of Cub fandom. I think we both brought, you know, kind of some pre-prepared analysis on things that were worth noting. I can let you go first on, you know, something that you saw and wanted to discuss about this first six games.
Yeah, one of the things worth noting, and I might be taking the low-hanging fruit here, is Imanaga, you know, obviously the 9Ks and going the no-no for a while. But one of the things that was really interesting to me is that while he was just on one and looking really good and getting those whiffs and those looking against the awful Rockies team, he was giving up a lot of hard hit balls that probably would have ended up way out of the ballpark on a fair weather day. That is a little bit concerning to me. Usually I'm the optimistic one, but that's a little concerning. And I think it really comes down to getting that fastball more up. You know, he did it in spring a little bit. If once he gets it elevated enough, that's going to induce more of that weak contact fly ball. But when he is in that top of the zone and not, you know, he's not going to light up the radar gun, you're going to see a lot of hard hit balls with great launch angles that are probably going to be out there for home runs. So we're going to take the good with the bad. Easy solution, just pitch him when there's the wind's blowing in. I mean, that should be pretty easy, right? He's one of the highlights there. I have so much written down, to be honest with you, Jeff. I'm just going to hit one more. And that's going to be Morrell. I mean, the almost grand slam. What a great, awesome moment between Morrell and Robertson. That was kind of cool. And he has just been tearing the cover off the ball. I know we already talked about his defense. I think they should still give him some time out there to see what happens. And if all else fails, move him over to DH, and then you got to figure out something at the deadline for third base. But Morrell is that type of player where you look at and you're like, man, that guy doesn't look like he should have power, but boy, does he. And he's got his eye on that strike zone, and he's got a lightning quick bat. And between him and Belly in the middle, I think you really got a legitimate power threat. One of the things I was really concerned with going into the year, they don't have that giant impact bat in the middle of their lineup. They don't have that Mookie Betts. They don't have a Freddie Freeman. They don't have that impact bat. But maybe they're proving me wrong with Morrell and Bellinger, because they've looked so good so far. And even Saya in the two spot. So yeah, those are my big observations. The bullpen's kind of shaky to me a little bit. You know, I think we're going to have highs and lows overall. You know, I'm not concerned with yesterday, though. You can take the stats in that game. Yes, you know, you had Cooper hitting for almost a cycle. You had things like that happen. Yeah, they're going to show up on the stat sheet. But overall, in a weather game like that, it's tough for me to take away anything. I think all those pitchers are going to be fine. And they're going to have better outings, obviously, than what took place yesterday. So, Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, I think the one that I want to talk about is Kyle Hendricks. Obviously, he's one of my favorite pitchers, so I'm going to come to bat to defend Kyle Hendricks a good portion of the time. So here I go. First episode of the regular season. I saw a lot of people really just harping on me on Twitter and harping on other folks on Twitter about his position in the rotation and the results. And I really do want to talk about how where a guy pitches to start a regular season isn't like their locked in number of a rotation order in 2024. It's just not how it works. It was probably a matchup situation, rest situation, a whole bunch of different factors is why certain guys end up starting in a certain spot. And the Imanaga choice too, of having him pitch at Wrigley in the cold, was a really good choice. So
yes,
I think that I would have potentially, in hindsight, looking at the results, have pitched Assad. But I think, you know, with Steele and Tyone going down, I think they were kind of looking to see different options and leaving that, you know, that ball in the court. Maybe not necessarily he did make the rotation, but not use all those bullets by having him pitch earlier, because given the Cubs' schedule early on, they have this Thursday off. They had last Friday off. They have next Thursday off. Just early on, and because a lot of it has to do with travel, there's not a dire need for a fifth starter most of the time. So there is opportunities to kind of spell some guys early in the season. So I understood why Kyle Hendricks is there. He's a veteran. He's been here a long time, and giving that start made sense to me. Yes, it did not go well. It was not a great outing for him. He had admitted after that he was fighting some command. And when Kyle Hendricks is right, he needs to be throwing pitches on the edge of the zone and then expanding. And if he's in the middle of the plate, he's going to get hit. It's always been the case for Kyle Hendricks. It's been the case since he's been a Chicago Cub. It's just, excuse me, the type of pitcher he is. He's not going to get a lot of swing and miss. He's not going to, you know, blow it by you because of the type of pitches he has. He's using tunneling, and he's using that sinker and that changeup and manipulating those pitches to hit corners and to induce a lower contact rate. So kind of looking under the hood in that first start, obviously just very early in the season, you know, he really leaned on that sinker a little bit more than he has in recent years, a huge jump in usage, and the changeup actually dropped in usage versus what he's been trending in his career. So I think, you know, you can see by that early data point, maybe he was fighting the grip on the two pitches and has been trying to kind of mix those in and was having command issues with them, and how those pitches were getting hit probably changed, you know, how he was deploying them. He wasn't using the straight four-seam fastball much in that start, and the curveball still is in that like 2% usage. That pitch is one that just, it doesn't have to be used a ton. He's never used it a ton, but he still hasn't seemed to found it or find it, and kind of being able to give, you know, these guys something to think about. Like that get it over curveball that he used to be when he was rolling, he would throw that like a first pitch strike. These guys are looking for that changeup or that cutter in the outside corner, and this thing like
just
barrels down the middle with that tumble. And it's just not something I expect. And he really needs that pitch to kind of expand his arsenal. And just looking at, you know, horizontal movement of his pitches versus what he was doing prior, he definitely saw in this first start more movement across the plane on his sinker and his changeup and his four seamer than he has in a number of years. The highest,
interesting,
the highest he had seen in since, well, ever on all those pitches. And the curveball, the horizontal movement, it dropped. It's not being used much, so I don't take that data, but it'll be, I feel like that kind of shows what he was talking about with fighting the command. If that thing's moving left to right more than you're expecting or more than it used to, maybe he's got a little bit something more when he came in the start. Maybe it was adrenaline. Maybe it's just another year in this process. He's feeling pretty healthy and he got a little more run. These things leaked into the middle of the zone. When you get that horizontal movement and you're Kyle Hendricks, yeah, that you're going to want to know what kind of movement you're getting and to make adjustments. So I'm going to look at after his next start, which is tomorrow versus the Dodgers. Weather's not going to be that great, and see if he's traditionally been very good at Wrigley Field and seeing if he can kind of right the ship. I know a lot of people on Twitter would say that he's cooked. He's cooked. He's done. It's one start. I know that there's there's a microscope on him because of the health issues, what type of pitcher he is. But, I mean, the fact the guy's still pitching when a year ago we weren't even sure if he was going to pitch in the majors again, I'm just going to give him the benefit of the doubt. If he gets on one, which he has in the past, the guy's a quality start machine. And
he is.
I'm not saying that's who he is anymore, but I'm not writing off Kyle Hendricks after one start in 2024. I just think that's ridiculous.
No. Yeah. Jeff, something that I looked into regarding Hendricks, because I during that game, I felt like he was getting squeezed quite a bit around the edges. And what that does, it's the old Greg Maddux line. Man, if he's not going to get that pitch, it's going to be a long night. And really, he was getting squeezed. In fact, I think ump scorecard gave that ump, and I can't remember who it was, a 94% across the board, which isn't awful. But the early going, I mean, all across baseball, you know, ump's not having a great year so far. But, you know, it's a 95, 96, and he was not getting those pitches on the outside. And like you said, I'm going to give – Hendricks the benefit of the doubt. I want to see him use that curveball once in a while. I want to see him flip one up there just to make hitters honest. The old LeVon Hernandez, remember when he used to drop that 63 mile an hour curveball? I mean, like that you got to show it. You have to show it once in a while because it keeps pitchers, keeps batters off balance.
That's an A-plus reference. That's a name I haven't heard in a really long time, and immediately was taken back to watching that guy pitch versus the Cubs, and for some reason, I'm picturing it in a Nationals uniform and just dropping slow curves down the middle and just being frustrated, like, why don't you swing? And I mean,
because they're doing enough for the fast.
Exactly. If that were so easy, I would be playing baseball, but I am here talking about it on a podcast. So
I'm not even that good at MLB The Show.
So moving on to the schedule for the week, the Cubs do have a little bit of tough stretches, how I'm going to call it. They do their West Coast trip right away this year, and we're only going to talk into next Thursday, but they do stay on the West Coast after that. There is one advantage I've always loved about the West Coast trip is the games usually start after my kids go to bed. So it's guaranteed that I'm going to see every pitch. So that is, but then, this just the need for extra coffee in the morning because you're staying up and watching a West Coast game is absolutely something on the table. But the Cubs do finish their homestand with three of the Dodgers, Shohei Ohtani coming to Wrigley Field. I believe it's the first time, isn't it? It's his first time.
Yeah, first time. Do you think he gets booed?
I don't think so. I don't know. I wouldn't bet on it.
Oh, but he's got to be excited coming to Wrigley. I mean, he's probably got
not excited enough to consider signing here, but we'll see what the federal investigators say before I.
Right.
Yeah, but it's an interesting group of pitchers the Cubs are facing. They have a stretch here. They play three at Wrigley versus the Dodgers, and then they go out west to play the Padres, and they're facing all righties in that stretch, all with some power sliders. Mm-hmm. We got Bobby Miller on Friday versus Kyle Hendricks, Jordan Wicks versus Yamamoto, the guy the Cubs never really engaged with.
Nope.
And then we got Gavin Stone and Imanaga on Sunday, which really, I feel like is a missed opportunity of having a Imanaga Yamamoto matchup. That would have been really fun, but there's still time for it at some point. And then they go to the Padres. They play the Padres. They played the Cardinals this week, and they didn't look overly impressive. Their pitching, especially their bullpen, looked rough, but their offense has been off to a hot start.
Yeah.
We've got, as looks like, at least doing my rotation counting, and you can make fun of me next week if you're listening to this if I'm wrong. Cubs should have Assad for that first game, and I believe it should be versus Darvish. And then I have bullpen game because that's what Luke Whittle started the game. That would be the bullpen spot. And that's going to be versus Joe Musgrove. And then Cubs get old friend and old development buddy Dylan Cease versus Kyle Hendricks to close out that series before they go off to Seattle. So definitely an interesting stretch of all righties. A lot of high-velocity fastballs. We're going to see that ghost fork from Yamamoto and his curveball. Simply the approach is going to be very, very important. We're going to see Mookie Betts, who's on an absolutely torrid stretch to start the year, 5 home runs already. Yeah, I think I'm not saying it's a measuring stick. It's too early in the year to use terms like that. But, the Cubs did what they needed to do versus the Rockies.
Yeah.
I'm hoping, being home and it being cold, you can take at least one of the three versus the Dodgers. And
stop stealing my notes.
Going out west, I'm hoping to see, some guys just, kind of with the weather, continue that hard hit rate. And, put up some nice offensive numbers versus some guys that, have fastballs and sliders that some of the guys in this offense have historically hit very well. So that being said, we do have our first ever pick to click brought to you by Northside Baseball. Sean and I are both Northside Baseball Writers, and we will be doing each week a small segment on a player we think is going to click going into the week series. And Sean, who is your pick to click going into this week?
All right, my pick to click, my first one is Seiya Suzuki. I really think you mentioned a lot of fastballs, a lot of hard throwing pitchers that he's going to be facing up against. I really like him against fastball pitchers. A couple of just silly numbers. I know it's small sample size. His average exit velocity is 83, barrel percentage is 68, hard hit rate is 84, and he's got a 72 sweet spot percentage. All those are in red at Baseball Savant, and if we know anything, it's red is good.
Yes.
And I think he's going to be the guy that's going to get probably the most at-bats in the game. I think he's really going to take that step forward for the next series and put the team on his back, but hopefully have some help as well. So he's my pick to click.
There we go. That's a good one. My pick to click this week is going to be Michael Busch. I don't think there's a surprise here.
Oh, the love. The love.
So Bleacher Nation had written an article, and it was something that I was actually looking into, and they wrote a really nice piece about the approach at Michael Busch to start the year, and looking at the AAA numbers of Matt Mervis and Michael Busch and high fastballs. And it seems that there is a weird scouting report out there that is saying throw a bunch of high fastballs to Michael Busch, but he didn't struggle with that pitch in the minors as much as other people have in the past, and he has not struggled hitting fastballs in the majors based on his small little cup of coffee last year and even
what we're looking at
this year. So
yeah,
so far he's at a 61% fastball rate in his at-bat, and he's going to see a lot of fastballs, and he's going to see some pitchers out west that he's potentially seen before. I should have looked into that. So I like the lefty bat out west in San Diego versus fastball. So I'm going to take Michael Busch, whose approach has been way better than the numbers. The numbers are solid.
Yep.
And I think he's going to break out and add another dynamic to this offense. Who are your picks to click? Feel free to send us some tweets or comment on Northside Baseball on what your picks to click are for the coming week. And that leads us to our last topic of the day. We are just going to look around baseball and talk about some things that we saw that we thought were really cool that are non-Cub related. And I'm going to start. Your pick for MVP, Mr. Bryce Harper, hit 3 home runs the other night, which was super cool as someone who really likes watching Bryce Harper play, but not as someone who is playing Bryce Harper in their fantasy league. I don't really appreciate what you did to me, Bryce, so I would like an apology. But that is just an absolutely mammoth game in weather that just isn't great. It was cool to see. Baseball's fun when Mike Trout and Bryce Harper are healthy and doing things. Like, those guys have just carried expectations for years, and when they're playing well, it's just fun. It's just fun to see. So that was something that I really enjoyed watching this week.
The thing that I really enjoyed, and, you know, I even took a little deep YouTube dive on him, is Shane freaking Bieber. My gosh. He looks like the Shane Bieber from 2019 to 2022. I mean, his velocity is up. His control is impeccable. Get these numbers. Now, really listen in, folks, on this. 12 innings pitched, 20 strikeouts, 1 walk.
Is that good?
Yeah, I think that's good. I mean, I'm new here, so I think... The thing that pains me the most is, you know, he was the most rumored target, I think, out of any player, you know, that was potentially on the market for the Cubs. Now, if they want to get him, unless something you know, never want to wish something bad happening against somebody, obviously. But if he keeps up this pace, or even, you know, I don't think he's going to keep up the pace, but if he gets anywhere close to where he was in 2019 and 2022 through that span, he's going to cost a lot in player value at the deadline, because the Guardians are going to end up trading him. I mean, that's just what the Guardians do. They're I don't think they're going to be in the position to, you know, win that division. They could, but even if they are in contention, we've seen them trade away their players year after year.
Yeah, I think it'll be tough to defend that one, especially if they're off to a pretty solid start. I know they're not, you know, world-beating opponents. They start with the A's, who are trying to set a major league record for most likely to look like a Bozo the Clown morning show on defense, which is impressive for an organization that has an owner that just embarrasses himself every time he opens his mouth. But, you know, I think if they continue to compete, yes, I don't think there's a price, just the way the Guardians operate, that's technically not going to allow them to move a player, meaning, like, if somebody blows them away, they'll move someone even if they're contending. But the better he pitches, you know, I think it's going to be a tougher sell. I already love Ken Rosenthal's piece about how the Marlins
are like, that's what happens when you're 0-7. I'm like,
7 games into the season, and they're already writing pieces about, you know, what's not nailed to the ground in Miami, and can we trade to a contender? So, you know, I just don't want to laugh, because there'll be a time this year where the Cubs lose to the Marlins, and I'll just cry myself to sleep. But another thing that I wanted to note, and is a very obvious grab, but the no-hitter from Ronel Blanco, this week. Really cool story. Guy was signed older out of the Dominican Republic. He's from Santiago, the Dominican Republic, the same as Christopher Morel. And he was a bullpen piece, has always kind of been on the fringe of making the major leagues. Last year, they decided, hey, we're going to have him try and start. And he dominated the Dominican Winter League. And he comes in his first start of 2024, the guy throws a no-hitter.
Super cool.
Love that. That's such a cool story. Such a, he was signed at 22 for the Dominican. That's pretty old for Dominican Republic, which is a weird thing to say, but that, I mean, you see all that, the international spending money and all those things that go into, man, they're signing these kids at 16 years old, which is just absolutely crazy. But yeah, 22 years old. The Astros have done that with other guys over there. Apparently they name dropped Framber Valdez is another guy they signed older, who's, he's been very successful. So congratulations to Ronel Blanco on his first no-hitter and the first no-hitter of 2024.
Congrats. The other thing I wanted to bring up is Bobby Witt is really earning that contract early on. I mean, that he just looks like that homegrown Royals player that is going to be a superstar for them. I know early sample size, but you still got to hit to get stats. That's the way I look at it. 1.344 OPS, 400 average. He's got 4 doubles, a triple, 2 home runs, and 2 stolen bases on early on. I mean, he just looks like that franchise. And I love when the Royals are good, and they made a splash in general. You know, with adding this offseason, which was nice to see. I think they look at that division and say, hey, maybe if we just add a few things and extend our youth, let's go ahead and let's compete for that division. And I think that's what they're going to end up doing. But Bobby Witt, I mean, just on fire. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that becomes a superstar in the league for years to come.
Yeah, it feels like we're in the middle of like a youth movement and a transition to just this group of this new core of players that are, excuse me, extremely talented, and exciting to see just that. I saw the stats the other night for the AAA team for the Baltimore Orioles. They put up 26 runs. They just have so many top prospects hitting in that lineup, and it's just unbelievable. I know at some point they're going to have to make some tough decisions and move some of those hitters to address probably the rotation and maybe the bullpen so that they can really just stand out in that AL East. I do enjoy that's my AL team this year. Really like watching the Orioles, really like Adley Rutschman. love like very awesome game managing superstar hitting catchers. They're very rare. So yeah, Eric Rushman is my dude. That's not a Cub. So, but yeah, I think that's a really good look at this week. Sean, if people are looking for you on all of the socials, where can they find
you? Hot Stove Cubbies on Facebook and Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. And also, I'm a writer at Northside Baseball. I'm writing a series called Unlocking Baseball, where I look at several different things to improve the game. I already got a couple out there. Make opening day a national holiday is one of them. The little teaser right here. Here's a little teaser. Expanding rosters. That'll be coming out soon. So I really appreciate that team over there. Obviously, you as well. For giving me that platform to talk about baseball and the Cubs and everything in between.
Awesome. And I've read all of the ones that have come out so far, and they've been very interesting. I think there are a lot of, you know, top of mind subjects for Major League Baseball as we look to improve the game but not dramatically change it in ways that, you know, make the game different than it was. And yeah, I really enjoyed the blackout piece that you addressed.
Thank you.
Is such a huge issue for expanding the game. That's a soapbox that I feel like every baseball fan stands on. But if you're looking for my stuff, I also write for Northside Baseball. I will be putting out a regular piece called Three Up, Three Down at the end of the week to preview series and talk about some guys that are hot and some guys that are not. So stay tuned for that each week. Also, you can find me anywhere on social media. You can find me at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn if you can figure out how to spell my name. Good luck. And you can find me on TikTok, all of those under Candid Cubs. Stay tuned for additional content from us from Bricks Behind the Ivy, including some Sunday streams of MLB The Show to just kind of talk about the Cubs. And also just looking at different things such as how things are going MLB-wise and just getting an opportunity to play a franchise with the Cubs and looking at how they work in MLB The Show. And additionally, we will be having some guests in the near future to discuss MLB The Show and different topics. So stay tuned with us. Like, subscribe, share, retweet. Do all those things. Review, expand our reach, help us out. If you like us, share us, tell your friends, tell all your friends. Join our Reddit community to discuss the games each week. But that's all we have for this week. Can't wait to talk to you guys again next week. Go Cubs!
Go Cubs!